I am your host, Jerry Paquette, co-author of the book Eat to Save Your Life and Director of Education with the Shoe Swap Food Action Co-op, a local organization addressing the issues of food security. What So What provides discussions about food, the people who grow and distribute it, and its links to our health and well-being. Today, I have Brad DeMille, owner of DeMille's Farm Market, with me. He's also What So What's sponsor, so I'm going to treat him very well, at least for part of the show. Welcome, Brad. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I know you're busy. You keep telling me you're busy.
Well, I'm trying to stay busy. It's always spring, and there's lots of things to clean up and get ready for the surprise that you left under the snow all winter. And this year is a little quicker than normal.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we'll talk about that and a whole bunch more. Our what for the day is the proposed change to the Trans-Canada Highway and what it means to the various businesses like DeMille's who have benefited over several decades from their virtually street-front locations on Salmon Arm's main drag. Next week, I'll be providing what for most of you will be new information about the impact of GMO foods on agriculture, nutrition, food security, and even safety. Pencil it into your schedule. If you're not clear on what GMO food is and what it means to you and the companies that foster it, you will be. Brad is going to be talking about how things are changing in his environment that's going to affect, in fact, his distribution of the food that we are so used to, the bright, colorful food. You told me once, Brad, that you continually turn over those beautiful colored fruits and vegetables in your bins so that the best isn't on top. It's right through the whole bin. And I've gone in and checked that out, and you're spot on. Way to go.
Well, they work hard at it, and it's not fair for someone to typically go to the think they're going to the bottom to get the freshest. And typically, we really work hard at making it all the way through, all good all the way through.
Well, it attracts a lot of people, and we are discussing the likely impact of changes to the Trans-Canada Highway on DeMille's Farm Market and several other established businesses situated at the moment right alongside Salmon Arm's main traffic corridor. So, Brad, first of all, give us some background on when and how DeMille's Farm Market came to be situated where it is today and how that location has served your family and your customers over the years.
Okay. Well, it basically started a little bit further to the south down on Silver Creek Road. We were about a mile down the road. The dairy farm, Dad and Grandpa started growing a bit of sweet corn, and eventually those 10 rows of sweet corn became some zucchini, cucumbers, pickling cukes, etc., dill, everything that kind of went with it. We had a little wooden stand with a local girl that took the money. End of the summer, they would split up the money and someone would get some of it. And my grandma and grandpa, I think, got paid first, which was the way it usually went. Us kids would bank our hours until the end of the summer, and we'd get paid for picking the corn and doing the stuff that we did. I wasn't a very hard worker when I was 8 or 9 years old. In fact, I don't really think I really started to contribute much until I was about 16 or 17, I think, when I needed car money or something like that. And I could see hey, I need some of this stuff to exist. And so we put up illegal signs every weekend to get people to drive down that mile to come in. The highways department would take them down on Monday and respectfully bring them back to us. The next Friday afternoon after the highways went home, we would put the signs back up, and the same thing would happen the next Monday. Was we'd put them, they would bring them back to us. And so we got some people out there. It was certainly a start. Dad and Mom bought the property, that 70 acres that we're at now on the Trans-Canada, it was probably 1980 something, right in that area. And then we opened.
So 10 or 15 years after you.
Yeah. And then we started to actually sell right from the main access to the highway. It made a colossal difference in the business of available, just not only from a tourism standpoint, being able to see you and see what's going on and enjoy. You planted the greens around the front highway to make you draw them in, and it just became and snowballed and got better and better. We were probably one of the original farm markets where the people could directly buy it from. So we sort of forged a lot of the problems that it took to get this stuff onto market. Mm-hmm. We were certainly in contravention of every zoning bylaw that could have been made, including signage. And the district fought for a long time. Eventually they saw the clarity that, you know, these guys actually have value. And so let's back off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the district's been very good since then. with our zoning. We're encouraged to grow as much as we can and bring other farmers' stuff in here. Right now we have approximately 60 different farmers that we draw from, all the way from ourselves, all the way down to Oliver and Estudios. No real U.S. farmers, because they come through typically wholesalers and brokerage houses, so you don't have a lot of control over what you get, except for some direct oranges from my grandpa's old place in Northern California. Since then, we started getting more and more into it. That was the main source of income for Dad, and they just developed it, and it became what it is today.
Yeah.
In a long, drawn-out way. I've owned the company now for 10 years. I put a lot of changes in myself. Just made it different. Dad always called it Safeway after he came in, because we had fancier racks, and it was like, well, I'm not trying to do that. I just want to make it so it looks more consistent and, you know, better quality throughout. And he gets it. I think it was just a way of him, you know, running at me a little bit or whatever.
It's quite a big complex down there. I've been, you know, beyond the area where I haven't been still to see the pumpkins cannoned off. So I got to do that this year. You've got to make sure you do it this year.
Well, we're trying to do it this year. I know the guys that are building the pumpkin cannon are probably getting a little tired of this, you know, every year thing. But, you know, they do it at no cost to us. And we contribute all the proceeds to the Salvation Army every year.
Wait a minute, they have to build a cannon every year?
No, they do it, but they have to haul it, put it on the trailer, haul it from Armstrong. And they also do the donkey days out in Turtle Valley, I think. And so they do that on a regular every year thing. So, but eventually, it's like anything, you kind of get tired of doing the same thing over and over. And it's neat to see, like, most of the guys are, they'll look at this pumpkin cannon like 20 times, and they look at it with their mouths hanging. The women, yeah, that's cool, let's go.
Well, my wife Carol is really keen to see it, and it's worked out all the time that we've missed it. This will be the fourth year we've been here, so we gotta, you gotta do it.
Well, I know. And Ben's Towing has brought every year two vans to the event so we can destroy them. And they've done that at no charge to us. So they haul them down in the day before. I set up the tarp so the glass doesn't go in the field. And then the next day they come and haul it back, and I clean up all the glass. And then we clean up all the yard and stuff like that. And
Have you taken videos of this?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, it's online. If you YouTube it, they're out. It's out there.
What's it under?
Just YouTube DeMille's Pumpkin Cannon, and it'll pop up. You'll get hundreds of them.
Okay, I haven't even seen that.
It's
so
pretty impressive, because it's like a bowling ball, really.
Yeah.
And they stuff it with the ballast in behind it, and when they let that cylinder of air go, that thing goes like 1,800 feet. It's gone.
Wow.
And the one year it was really cool, because the clouds were really low, and it would go into the cloud, you'd lose it, and then downwind, it would come out. It looked like you're on an old battleship in the pirate days. You see these... And it was pretty cool, because the pumpkin basically explodes when it hits the ground from like 1,000 feet. It's just destroyed. But it was pretty funny, because it's just funny. You just laugh to yourself, because it's one of those good feel-good things.
Well, I'm going to nag you. Make sure that you get the guys up here to do that again.
Okay.
Now, you've got lots of gadgets down there. I've seen you on your tractors and your front-end loaders. But you drove to the studio here today at the Downtown Activity Center on something brand new for you.
Well,
tell us about that.
About 9 months ago, I looked on the internet, and there was this this bike that they were going to develop called the Beast. And it was through a Kickstarter program. So the Beast was a prototype at that point. So a Kickstarter is basically, if you help to fund this, you'll get a dramatic discount on the end product if you're interested. So I bought two of these, and the discount was about $1,000 or $1,500 each. So these things are worth about $3,000 each, let's say. And it's an all-electric bike. It charges by solar if you want it to. It also plugs in. It's got like ATV tires on it. It's a beast. It's not light, and it goes pretty good. Like, I scooted here in 5 minutes to town.
You said it does over 40.
Yeah, I was doing 44K on the side, and I went on the sidewalk a little, and just, you know, I wasn't running over any pedestrians or any people in wheelchairs or anything like that. I was being quite respectful, but I got my little helmet, and it was, there's no noise. You just roll, and it's just funny. It's just, you sit there laughing, and people look at you, because there's no noise, and people look at you like, what is that thing? And it's pretty unique. Like, and I'm going to go downtown after this and drive down to town and see how people react
to
it. So
everybody needs to know. It's sitting here in the parking lot at the Downtown Activity Center
right now.
I shouldn't have said that, right?
My idea originally was for people at like Sandy Point or Pierce Point, if the Albertans would come, they might rent one of these for a week for their kids, and they could run around. So it might be a venture also that we could become a dealer. And possibly for it. But it's a lot of fun, and it's just, you have a smile from ear to ear when you ride this thing.
You still got the smile.
It's just funny. Anyways.
Okay, well, let's get, now you're going to have your own strip of ex-Trans-Canada Highway to run up and down on in this quiet little beast.
Oh, yeah, great.
Let's talk about that. So, I don't know that everybody knows that the Trans-Canada is going to change its configuration right at the corner where it turns and goes out of town. When did the government decide they're going to be changing the highway? Has that been long in the making?
Well, I think they've been discussing it for at least 10 years. And everyone says, well, it's at least 5 years down the road. And everything's kind of kicked to the curb there 10 years down or 5 years down the road. Eventually, those 5 years run up. And I know they've got a promise. Christy Clark said that they're going to four-lane the highway from Alberta to Vancouver, whatever. That's great in theory. Some places it's very difficult to do, like the Bluffs out of Sorrento and places like that. Some things it's not possible, and really, does it speed things up for the cost? It's hard to know. I think that they had planned it for years, and there is definitely, this is the second version of the plan. The first plan was horrid. It had us on a dead end road. And for me, if there's no school bus that goes down that road, I'll guarantee which road in the district's going to be the last one plowed. And I'll be the one plowing it because they won't show up. And not that they do a bad job, they just have lots of roads that are more of a priority than going down to a market. Plus, then you'd have to come to the end, go all the way back, and go back. So it was worse than what we've got now. The version now is better, but it's still, it's a net loss to us that we're going to have it's going to be dramatically negative.
Well, we'll have a discussion about it. Now, if they had a discussion with particularly with the business people who are going to be affected by this, have there been talks?
No, not really. They've been they're saying that we're going to talk to these people, and they give us timelines. And this started last very late summer. They're going to have a public forum by November. Then they were going to have a public forum by March. And here we are in May almost. And I haven't heard a word from them for a minimum of 6 weeks now. And it's just like, it's weird because it just doesn't exist for a moment. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to some very important people on this, all the way from Greg Kylo, who showed us his support on it, the agriculture minister, the highways minister we're supposed to meet with shortly here. His second, third in charge came for a meeting with us in my office. We sat and talked for an hour and a half on the merits of this. And I was not holding anything really back. I wasn't trying to be rude or non-respectful, but I was telling them that it just is, seems like a ridiculous waste of my money to do all this. It's not that it's about me, but it's everyone's tax money that goes into these 4 kilometers of more road for nothing.
So. Well, you've got a drawing there in front of you, so I'm going to come around, and because you can't show this to everybody who's listening in, unless we switch to TV mode, which we're not going to do, I assure you.
Maybe in a couple of years.
Okay, so... All right, here I am. I'm sitting beside you. You've got a big drawing. I can see the original. There's your corn patch with the maize.
Yeah.
I've never seen it from overhead before.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, especially in a small aircraft. It's quite fascinating to see it.
I bet. Yeah, that's really neat. All right, so right beside the cornfield is your DeMille's operation, all your buildings that we all know. We drive in right off the Trans-Canada. So describe for everybody as best you can. You're on radio.
Okay.
How this new highway is going to come in.
Well, basically, let's take it from the... coming from the west, so you're heading east. As you go by Ben's Towing and Fisher's Funeral, you're going to stay on the original corridor from there. At about where the little groundhogs come out onto the grass every morning, and they start to slope inside the radius of the existing curve by quite a ways. It lessens the curve to a fairly, it's a very round curve as opposed to a fairly dramatic one that's existing now.
What's this? These structures right here?
This is a big chicken farm on the left-hand side. I think it's okay. Jan's Poultry Farm.
Okay, so if you can envision that, what we're seeing is Jan's Poultry Farm not affected by the change at that point.
Yeah, it just basically goes in front. Originally, that road right in front of their place, right in front of the barn. So it doesn't really affect that. So it starts to slope maybe a property or so after Jan's.
Right.
And then it goes dramatically inside the curve, and it rejoins just past Pedro's more towards town. You'll see as you're coming out of the highway where they stopped the improvement from the last three-laning or four-laning. You'll see there's a concrete abutment on as you come from the east, and that's where they planned originally to sort of rejoin the highway at that point. So
is he affected by it?
Yes. If you look in this drawing here, this is where the frontage road is proposed to come off of. This is Walmart. As you're coming out of town, the 30th Street.
So you're going past Walmart.
Yeah, you're going past Walmart. So you'd have to come off on a frontage road to get to ourselves and Pedro's.
I see.
And that goes right in front, not directly in front of their brand new building, which they probably would have loved to have known there was going to be a frontage road sitting there when they built their new building. And then eventually it sort of goes, in their theory, is that it goes back onto the old asphalt from the highway. And then it continues on to our place. Originally, there was 3 years of life left in the old bridge. From my understanding is that the district's been asked to take the liability for it. Apparently, now it has 20 years of life left in it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's amazing when someone else takes the liability, how much longer it'll last. But it's an old bridge. But the problem is once they touch it and they go into these new bridge structures, the new guidelines is the bottom of the structure has to be a minimum of 2 meters above the high water mark. So then you take your structure element of the road, let's say that's another 3 feet, roadway is another foot, let's say, and then the side guard rail is another 4 feet. The bridge is going to end up roughly 12 to 15 feet in the air compared to the height of the bridge that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it from that perspective, the lead into it has to be filled with fill, and you have to build up that roadway a colossal amount. And a lot of this is marsh. Mm-hmm. And so anytime you're going to add tons and tons of product, it's going to sink. And something else is going to go up. A good example of that is if you're on the Swan Lake Bridge at the end of Vernon, how you almost get a launch off of some of those hills now because of the way that that bridge is sinking into the marsh. And that's a very similar area to what we have at this end, because this is all basically floodplain at this end of the shoe shop.
Right.
And so it goes dramatically in. And so if you're coming from the west, there is an option to turn off, and it's very close to the S-turn as it goes down Silver Creek. It replaces it with a turn circle.
Yeah, these graphics are quite something. It looks like a starfish almost.
Yeah, it's amazing. Complex. My point was that they're lessening the curve, so it's not as dramatic, but they're adding all these other turns in. It seems counterproductive, and it just seems like a lot of, for this area and this much volume of traffic at this time, they're building to a 50-year idea, but that's 50 years from now,
mm-hmm.
and I can't see it. We know that in the Okanagan Shoe Shop, anywhere you go, whether it's Penticton, Kelowna, all these places, we know we have a lot of gridlock during summertime. It's because we have too much potential business. Is that a bad thing? And there's no real way to build a road so you're absolutely the most efficient when you're the busiest. Because
mm-hmm.
then, 6 months later, when you're absolutely slow, you've built this monolith system that is not utilized. And it sort of build to the medium of what your volume should be, I think.
We're looking a little like L.A. here.
Well, I think it looks like Lower Mainland because the way the new design is, there's no crossing the highway left hand unless it's through a traffic light or an underpass.
So 30th Street.
Yeah.
As you pointed out.
So you're driving everyone to 30th and or else the underpass over on the reserve here and back over to another clover leaf or another turn circle that takes you back. One day I was with Greg Kylo, and I gave him a model car. I said, okay, you've driven by here now. Get back to me. So he looked this way, turned around. He actually went down Silver Creek. I go, think of it this way. You can see the map. The guy in the car can't. I said, so at this point, you're lost, but you know exactly where you're going. And it was just kind of, he says, yeah, this is a bit of a cluster, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
it
he concurred and said, you know, this is a lot, but he's only got a certain amount of power because he's not directly tied to the transport ministry. And a large time, they do what they want. They say they're listening, but I don't think they hear you.
Hmm.
And I think it's...
So, Brad, as I look at this, certainly the original curve, the one that we've got now as we exit or enter Salmon Arm, it's a sharp corner, I guess, especially for the big trucks. But it seems to me not so bad if you're going to have four lanes. Right. Right now it's two lanes, so that's kind of tricky with the big trucks,
right?
Especially.
Well, it's definitely dangerous looking because you see this truck coming at you, and there's no physical separation between you and the truck.
That's right.
You're both going 70, and that's scary.
Now, why wouldn't it have been a solution? I don't know whether you've talked to them, and I don't know what your options would be, given that we're going to have this a complex of some sort. What would have been wrong with keeping it that way, but offering up four lanes of traffic? I mean, it's still 60 kilometers an hour.
Right. Well, I said, why don't you use the existing corridor? I said, you already own this land.
Yeah.
And it's really just pinching a little bit of property lines on both sides. Build a new bridge on the inside curve, like you're going west. That becomes your westbound route. You build those two lanes first, put the bridge in, build, and then when that one's built, you build the other one next to it, so the separated four-lane highways. And the curve isn't horrible. I mean, it is,
not,
especially at 60.
Rates.
But their thing is that you're going to put this brand new four-lane separated highway, and you're going to go 60. Said, I go 90 on this thing sometimes, and I'm going to go 120 on this.
You only do 44 on your
right. Only 44 if it's electric. And I don't think that you're going to be able to control that speed, because at 60K, you're going to a new light, and there's going to be a new light just before Bucker Fields to control right. that by the old Canadian Tire.
Mm.
And then your next light is just at Shell. Then your next light is, you know, how it goes. So you're going to go through eight sets of lights. So you're going all this speed and all this expense to hurry up to go to eight lights.
Mm.
What's the point? And you're affecting a potentially 22 different properties to do that. And just because these
how many properties?
22 different
22.
Properties.
That includes residential?
Yeah.
How many businesses are going to be affected?
Well, ourselves, of course, Pedro's would be, and all these guys in this industrial park here, from Fisher's Funeral Home, you got Mark at the body shop, you got Ben's Towing, you got the guys that do the heavy industrial stuff, ABC Storage. These guys are largely unrented. And then Foresight Consulting is there.
Right, because that turn that we're all used to making is...
Yeah, you can't get off at Fisher's anymore. You have to actually turn back towards it, and then you can't get back on unless you go back around the other way. And once you see this plan, and certainly if you guys want to, anyone that wants to come see the plan, it'll be at my store, and certainly we're showing it. I've been sort of formally asked not to take it to meetings. This isn't a meeting, by the way. So, and to show that this is what they're thinking. The guys who draw it, I mentioned this, just because you can draw it doesn't mean it should be built. And, you know, I said, well, the existing corridor would be a much better, more economical way to do it because you own the land and you're not affecting all these other property owners at the same time. And I don't know if I made much progress or not. But it affects us in a large part because as you come, if you're heading from the west, there's large cottonwoods all along the river bank, and you can't touch those. And those things are tall. They're 150 feet tall. So you can't see anything until, as you head towards town, you can't see anything until you've gone past basically the sight line of our business. Our business is based on, we've got a pretty good handle
right.
on this.
So unless you're really familiar, you're a local, you're not going to see that there's a... What's your traffic like now from people who are not residents of the Salmon Arm area? How many people do you have coming from the west who stop in?
It's an equal number of the ones going west and east. It's a pretty equal number. What we find in the summertime especially, and when it gets busier than anything, let's say past like June on, if you're coming down the highway and you're going 60 and you see our big parking lot and it's fairly active and it's full, people gravitate to that kind of stuff. It's like you're not that you're looking at a car accident, but you've got to wonder what's going on because you see that. And that factors into about 20% of brand new clients every month from June, July, and August. And so if you impact that 20% of brand new business, you don't have those brand new customers. And then your 80% of your repeat customers, that number starts to drop too. Mm-hmm. And that happens fairly quickly. Gatsky's Market, when they took that new road over the bypass, 95% of his business dropped overnight. When they did Valley Produce in Vernon, the old Vernon Highway used to go through, they lost half in one day. And they were able to half, and they got back to another, they got back up 20%, and that's all they could do. They had to close and move.
Wow.
Because the impact of the new customers coming off the highway. People will venture to a point, but if you're a family of four and you got three kids screaming in the back and you've gone past our place and past Pedro's, you're not going to turn around.
And you're doing well over 60, as
oh,
you
you're
say.
Yeah, and you're not going to turn around. It's just a fact of life, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as you start seeing those numbers, we talked about earlier, that 80% of your returning or your second customers that come in as a regular customer now starts to drop to, you know, a smaller number. And then eventually your volume stop, your pricing has to go up. And so that affects your volume. And it's an ugly cycle. It just goes down because, and then at some point where in the wintertime, you don't have any real something to substantiate you being there for another 6 months of the year. And so you close during the winter. And then those people find other places to shop, and they don't come back for the remainder of those other 6 months. And then your numbers shrink even more. Right. And it becomes really an ugly scenario.
Before we continue with this story, because I have some questions about their responses to you, and I'm interested in the tone. But I wanted to ask you about, what was it I wanted to ask you about? Oh, yeah. Every week I read produce from the local shoe swap area, which you talked about in your introduction, as well as from around the world, including Grandpa's Orange Farm in California. How far abroad do you range to get? You have mangoes.
Yeah, actually, we have GMO-free papayas, which is a difficult thing to get these days. Generally, about 97% or something like that of all the papayas in the world now are all GMO. We've been able to source non-GMO papayas, which takes about 3 weeks of booking time, so we have to be a bit ahead of the curve. Right. So when we're out, we're kind of out.
You know what? I didn't realize they weren't GMO, so I stopped buying them because we lived in Hawaii, my wife and I, for a while, and we love papaya. Papaya in the morning for breakfast with cottage cheese in the middle. Man alive, that just drove me nuts. I loved it. And I stopped buying it because they turned to GMO.
Yeah, and so we've been able to source them. We get two or three cases a week. And it's starting to gain some momentum. Even organics, after we looked last year and we thought January, we said, you know what, we're half pregnant on this this organic thing because it wasn't really growing. And we said, you know what, let's drop our margins on it. So let's make a fair margin so we increase our volume. And we sell actually 7 times more organics now in a 1 year period just by dropping our margin 15 points.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because when I do my produce orders now, a lot of it is, not quite half, is organics now. And it's really starting to take steam. We have some little videos on YouTube people can look up about organic stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so we're trying to get a little bit more, a little bit more progressive with our stuff, and it's been fun to do because
that is
the quality is better.
You know, because something like 7% of all the crops in the world are now GMO. That's all.
Yeah,
I mean that's a fairly big number even then, but one given all the talk about it would think it's more. But it's 7%. But organics is only 6%.
Wow,
it's less than the GMO. Hmm. So how do you do organic? Tell us about that.
Well, for us, like how we buy it.
Well, yeah.
Well, when we source it,
who you buy it from, how you know it's organic.
And, well, we go through. One of our suppliers is Terminal Produce out of Vancouver, and they are actually an IGA supplier. They contract them through, and we get through backdoor sales. We can buy stuff, I hate to say this out loud, but we can actually get a better buy than the IGA stores can because they're flagship stores, so they charge them more. And that's why it gives us the buying power because of our volume.
I would have thought it would be the other way around.
I would have thought too. But all the organics that we have, typically most of them are all USDA or through their U.S. California Organics Act, which is a tough act to follow. No pun intended there. There's different methods, like the Oregon tilth method, which isn't as good. You can go a year, I think it is, without having something on your land. Then you're deemed organic. It's not as thorough. The U.S. Organics Act, especially in the California base, is very, very strict. And so we rely on them to do a lot of their certification. Stuff that's coming from overseas, especially like mangoes, papayas, avocados, not so much. Most of that's Mexican. You got to trust that there's some systems in place that you have to put some trust in. It's a bit of a step outside the comfort zone, but I think that you can tell generally, but the USDA standards, I think, are pretty reputable. Mm-hmm. I would trust them mostly.
Is about trust, isn't it?
It has to be because at some point you're going to drive yourself crazy if you start looking up everything and sort. If you have the stamp USDA on it, you got to go with that as what is because they're the toughest one to come up to as far as standards go, and as far as penalties and stuff like that, they don't allow a lot of cheating. Mm-hmm. Our BC standards, some of the stuff I grow and I pick up in the summertime, are from growers like my blueberries. They're non-certified. They're grown organically. He's beside the biggest organic blueberry farm in BC.
Is that in Abbotsford?
Yeah, in Abbotsford. Yeah. And this is an older East Indian fellow, great guy, doesn't speak a lick of English. The fellow that I deal with, another East Indian fellow that I buy out of Caramis, he picks up my blueberries every week. And I have people ask me, well, are they organic? I said, well, they're not certified. He refuses to jump through the government hoops to do it. I said, but he's beside the biggest blueberry organic blueberry farmer in the valley. So just
that's
by his...
That's part of certification, isn't it?
Yeah. You have to have buffer zones and things like that.
Yeah.
And I said, do you think that he would really be sitting beside him, the biggest organic blueberry farmer, he's spraying all this stuff? I said, I don't think it'll last very long. He only sells us like 1,000 pounds a week. So it's not like it's massive business. It's something that he does for a little cash on the side, and he keeps them clean, and I have a very good following for them that has given me the trust to say, and I give them his phone number. I said, you can call him, but you're going to need a translator because, like I said, not a lick of English. And he doesn't trust the government as far as jumping through the hoops for organic. He said, I'm not going to do it because I'm too old.
Well, a lot of people are in that position, yeah. Especially the very small farmers around here. Yeah. Some have gone the certified route. And they're fairly established now, but new people coming in, and they start up a farm, they want to do well, but they can't afford the process.
Exactly. And so for us, we have an excellent market. I sell out of blueberries every week.
And I bought a whole flat last summer and froze them.
And I've had ladies, like some tough customers that have demanded in no uncertain terms to have absolute proof that this is, and the only proof I can give them is, you know, I'm not going to go down there with this lady because that would be crazy expensive, is to give them the fellow's phone number. And you talk to him directly and you take his word for it. And that sort of, and then they're like, well, you'd do that? And, well, yeah, because I'm not hiding anything. I'm not going to say it's organic unless it is.
So this is, I mean, this speaks to the kind of history you've had here and what you've established, not just a place to operate that people know, but also the trust relationships. You've built that up over the years, and that's part of what's at risk here now. So tell me about the talks you've had. You said you spent, was it 6 weeks ago or something, you had a face-to-face, discussion.
Yeah.
What was the tone like, and what kind of concern did they express about the impact on your business?
Well, it was pretty good. Like, they were talking, they were pretty well prepared. I was a little bit better prepared than them, I think, because I challenged them on a few points that they had thrown something from a highways perspective. I'm like, well, actually, I looked that up, and it's more like this. And then you show them, if you do your research and you do it properly and you have the facts that represent your side, they respect that. If you don't run at them like they're not the smartest people, and you start yelling at them, they will stop listening. They listen to our concerns. They're not in the business, they said, to put people out of business. For this one, for all of us along this highway corridor, we're not on the highway anymore. We're 150 feet off, and it's going to be an elevated road that's behind trees and fairly far away from our existing highway, our existing road. And it's going to be a negative impact. There's absolutely no doubt. We expect between 20 and 50% loss in business from them. And I said, you know, this is not going to be without a cost to you.
So how did you determine that percentage?
Talking to people, and it's a gut feeling and a guess.
Yeah, I mean, you talked earlier about people are going to try and go out of their way at first, but they're going to...
Yeah.
You've got the trees,
and that's
visual
boundary. It's a guess, honestly.
It's
and
a guess,
I've talked to a lot of very smart people about this, people in the business, people out of the business, and the general thing is, as soon as they see this map, they go, ugh, that sucks.
Well, you wouldn't look at this and buy your place here if you're just starting out for all the reasons that you've said.
Well, what it does is, like, I have a commitment to my dad for a mortgage on this. I've committed to buy this property, and this business is worth so much money. If they take half of my business away, is this property and that value still going to be realized by dad? Mm-hmm. I can't make those payments, so I'll default on my loan, and I will go broke. And that's the problem, is that he's not, oh, geez, you know, here, you just go ahead and take this. And so his value, this 70 acres of this front 5 acres, now is not highway frontage anymore. It is now 200 feet off the highway. Is it worth half the value it was? Probably true. But who's causing that? These guys are causing that. And that's the problem, is that to mitigate the problem, they said, well, we can put signs up. And I told him, I said, you know what, all due respect, your signs suck. Because they're too small, they're too far off the highway. Like, we took a trip to Seattle, poured rain the whole weekend. We didn't hit a puddle the whole weekend. We came back to Coquihalla on the 8 miles of new road from Kamloops. They bid all that four laning. First thing you see is a $20,000 sign that says expect water pooling on highway. It was a horrible. There was water everywhere that wasn't draining off a brand new road. And these are the people that want to bring us this. That's what concerns me. I said, you guys can't even paint lines on a road that stay. There's no reflectors. I said, your roads, you said you can't maintain the ones you have.
I drive home on the Trans-Canada Divine Bay from Salmon Arm quite regularly. In the winter, there are no lines
there are no
on
lines.
The road. That's pretty
them.
Terrible.
I asked him, I said, don't you think that 10 gallons of environmental paint or 1 gallon of paint that sticks, what's worse for the environment? I think the 10 gallons of environmental paint are. I said, and maybe don't paint in the rain. You know, just little things like that. That's so frustrating. And just little things like that. And the reflectors and some signage. I said, your signage is not going to work. I said, where are you going to put it? I said, the only signage we're really technically allowed to do is on native land. Mm. And that's where you see all these signs, these billboards and stuff. And don't you get kind of sick of seeing them all in the same spot every time? And do you really read
do
them every
day?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know if you
all
do.
All right, so I'm looking at this, and I'm coming in from Blind Bay, and to get to your place or Pedro's or any of these places down here, I have to come out, I have to take a, what's this little spin-off road?
Yeah, off to the turn circle.
Goes down, becomes, it's one of the legs of a starfish. I have to go around a traffic circle and down and around and here, and then to get back on the road, I can't see where I am
Yeah,
now.
You're going to go
here.
Here. And you're going to go back to the Walmart turned by Woodsman Equipment there.
That's very cumbersome. You're right. There's no doubt. We're spoiled.
Yeah.
But we're not going to get unspoiled.
And I can see where they don't want the people crossing left across traffic. But honestly, we're really good at not running into people. Like really, really good at it. We rarely have any accidents. I can see something like this. If 100 people every hour wanted to turn left, I can see that you kind of want to control that. We've had people turning left out of our driveway for many, many years. And ever since they did the three lane in the center, and this speed has been basically maintained at 60, it's been very, very few, if any. There's been no fatalities and very, very few, if any, real fender benders. Things like the down by the co-op in on the way to Blind Bay where they've had those deaths this year.
Yeah.
That's a concern, more so than this mess. And what they've done is they forgot really to fix the bridge because it still sits there. And they've done all of this. And just from a cost perspective, we can't afford it, I don't think.
Mm.
And I can't afford it as a business because as soon as it drops, that formula, you see it, how it shrinks. And to mitigate that, to get them in here, like this summer, I'm invited and making our own farmer's market on Mondays and Thursdays. I have 20 vendors to start with. We're putting tents in our near our petting zoo from 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock to get people out to our place. My hope is that I'll have potentially up to 50 of these folks. Mm. And my idea is that, and people say, are you crazy? You're inviting all this competition into your yard. I'm like, well, no, if they're going to walk by somebody's door to a farmer's market, and they're going to, it may as well be my door. Right? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. And they're in a setting. It's a farm. You're going to hear the rooster in the background. You're going to be able to have ice cream that I might just be able to sell them. And they're going to be able to create a habit to come out to our place. And then the organic farmers that potentially maybe don't sell their stuff and maybe decide, you know, setting up a tent twice a week is a lot of work. Why don't I just sell you this product directly? And this way I could buy more farmer stuff and I'll have better access to their products on a daily basis. Because at the end of the day, if he's got 20 bunches of beets left, why should he take them home? I'll buy them from them. And that gives us a better visibility from, you know, those people that are going to farmers, especially even from a tourist point of view, if we could get them on a regular basis to come out. So,
okay, so let me remind everybody that I'm talking to Brad DeMille. This is CKVS 93.7 FM, and this is What So What with Jerry Paquette. And we are talking about the impact of the change of the Trans-Canada Highway, double laning it and moving it further. What's that direction?
South. Or no, it's north, sorry.
Yeah, that's north, isn't it? North by about 200 feet from DeMille's front as it is right now. So, Brad, what kind of timeline do you see? Remind me again when they're going to start this.
Well, they were talking about preloading the bridge access on both sides in by next 2016.
That's really come up fast. And there's been no public discussion about
nothing.
This. You've had private talks with representatives of Transport Canada. Is that who you talked to?
The Ministry of Highways, British Columbia.
Okay, so it's provincial at this point. It's a federal highway, but this is the BC.
Right.
Okay. What are your plans?
Well, Transport Canada, just to remind everyone, they have a plan like to bring everyone as fast as they can on a highway from here to, like, let's say it's Vancouver to the Alberta border.
Sure.
The problem is, from a business perspective, is nothing happens until somebody spends a dollar. You don't pay road taxes by not getting gas. I can get gas in Canmore just before I come to BC now. You're going to make it so fast that I'm not even going to have to buy gas until I get to Vancouver. And then I'm not going to have to buy gas on any of those places. So nothing happens. No one stops for a snack. And they might have to go to the washroom once in a while. But it's going to be a loss of income. And we need to have the commerce that's related to the highway to make it all work. It's hard to make highways pay for themselves if you're not selling them fuel. An electric car now uses the road for free because you're not getting any tax off their gas.
Right.
And that's what the Americans are struggling with a lot of these efficient cars. What our plan is?
Yeah, you must be sitting down talking with family and with other cohorts and saying, what are we going to do? We got 1 year to make some decisions.
Well, we've potentially have a new fish market that wanted to come in and set up our place, not from Fisherman's direct out of Vernon. It's a very good place out of Kamloops. They have a place in Nelson. Mm-hmm. They have a place in Kelowna, one on the coast. They wanted to set up here. To be fair, I showed them this plan. They're on hold because of it. So I consider that, I call it a meteorite. So meteorites are hitting the atmosphere now. That's a meteorite to me. We know there's an asteroid coming in a year or so, and I have to be so far ahead of that before the lights start to go dim, and me as the dinosaur go, geez, what's that darkening from? I don't want to have this to be my extinction event. We have to be so far ahead of that first shovel full, that if I'm not ahead of the first shovel, I'm going to be the dinosaur on the wrong continent. And I need to either move.
What are your, either move, go ahead.
Or exist. Have we done all this work and all these buildings and all these coolers to exist, to go to half our sales? And my staff is going to be down to 6-7 months. So it's like I told the district guys, I said, let's say you laid off, you only half of your business, you can only keep them employed for 6 months. Do you think your best people are going to work here? Or do you think they're going to work for Vernon or Cologne or someplace they can get full time? So your pool of talent now evaporates too. So now it gets even worse. So you can't keep full-time people.
So that's you, and I was going to say to a lesser extent, it looks like it's Pedro's as well, but nobody's going to make that jag.
Less people will do it, absolutely, no doubt.
He's going to be affected too.
Absolutely, no doubt. And plus, where he's on the first road or is he on the second? You know, it's six of one half to the other.
Yeah.
And our proposal was to have a jog off here, but you got to think of the elevation of this highway now. It's going to be down to 10 feet in the air. It's going to be a little more difficult to do. It's difficult. You almost have enough elevation to have an off ramp and then go underneath kind of thing. But geez, that's a lot of work.
So this hasn't been brought to the community.
No.
It seems to me like it needs to be. There are several cultural icons in Salmon Arm. When you come in, you think of, three or four things right off the bat. This is one of them. And that's going to have an impact, as you say, on not only your business, but on the number of people who you can't hire.
Yeah.
Now people will have to be let go and all the other things. So how does this get brought to the community, short of our talking on radio a bit?
My feeling on it, as soon as it's brought to the community, I think, and I've talked to some pretty professional people on this, is that largely the decision's been done.
Yeah,
it's been made. It's kind of like, well, I'm going to do this, kind of appease you and make it sound like we're listening. I think that by the time it comes to the community, I don't think they're going to listen. I don't think it'll have any impact. I think by the time it gets to that point, 99% of the decision's been done. They're spending, this is a lot of money to draw these things twice now. Are they going to go again at it? I mean, I'll draw you something. I drew them one, and I showed them what I thought it should be. And they go, well, yeah, we can't do that. Why? Well, you can do this. Why can't you do that? And I'm really pessimistic to think that, like, sometimes they come off really disingenuous in the fact that they pretend they're listening. But like I said earlier, they're just not hearing you.
Well, they've got their parameters, and they're not the bosses. They're coming out representing somebody else.
So. Well, in the ministry, like, we're affecting two of the biggest farm markets in BC, when you think of it that way, and it's about agriculture access. Well, they're doing the complete opposite of having mm-hmm. agricultural access. They're actually denying it. I showed Minister of Agriculture, I showed him my cooler. I had 350 bins of apples in there. I said, let's take this and cut it in half and tell all these farmers that just wanted to sell me these apples that they can no longer sell me apples. I said, it's going to affect not only me, next door, and growers all the way down to Oliver and Sue's, up to Karamias, up to Coston, where I get a lot of the organics from. It's going to affect all of those guys. Every one of those agricultural growers is affected by this decision. And that's where it impacts not just me, but way more businesses than that.
We've only got a few minutes left. Let me throw a zinger into the discussion. As you know, I'm a member of the Shoe Swap Food Action Co-op. And one of the things that we're really fighting for is the development of a food hub where people can not only come in and get local foods, but to be educated. We're going to have kitchens. We're going to have all manners of things for families and the local farmer to make it better. Why don't you become our food hub?
Well, we could. I mean, there's certainly
potential.
You've got
the land and space.
Dad's got the land and space.
Well, Dad, we can talk Dad into it, can't we? Well, as a discussion,
we'll see.
We could have, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. And I have some ideas we're cooking. There's four different options we're going through, and mm-hmm. two are pretty dramatic that we're working on that are sort of within a certain amount of people that know it, and certainly looking at some dramatic changes to alleviate these problems. Because either eventually, if this exists, it'll close us. Mm-hmm. In the existing business model we're at now,
you've got to have a different business model.
Yeah. And if you don't, you're still going to end up, I swear, it's going to end up to six, eight months a year and forget winter altogether and close. But Davidson's Market did that at the east end of town there, and they never came out of it. Mm. They ended up closing. Now it's a garage. And whether the family didn't want to take it over, I don't know, but it's gonna be a negative impact on this business. Mm. What is happening here, it will never be the same after that road changes.
You've got space here for a Cirque du Soleil tent.
Oh, it is kind of a zoo and a circus around there sometimes.
Now, yeah.
But and we've done what we can. Like Dad owns this house in the front. That's largely it's in the ALR, and they won't change it out. But there's no possibility. What would you grow there? Dandelions are doing really well, but no one eats those things anymore. So, and then with a little bit of land, and Pedro's got his little 4 acres there. And it's dramatic. And I don't know if they realize the impact that's going to be on them. Maybe they're looking past it as, well, we're close enough right to the highway. It's certainly an advantage as opposed to this is a disadvantage.
Well, yeah, there's an advantage, but as I look at the map, I still have to get off the main drag where I'm going 60 or 70 or 80 clicks and take a right-hand turn and zing in backwards, so it's less attractive. Right now, it's just, oh, I forgot to get some corn, or I just pull in, that's all. It's really easy.
And it's easy because it's a very quick reaction, and a large part of our customers come in and they do that because they're new and they're, wow, what's going on in this place? Mm-hmm, and even on Pumpkin Cannon Days, like the place is packed and people, I just had to see what was going on. I didn't know what was going on, but we have to see because people are like that, right?
Yep.
So.
All right. Well, you haven't got much time left to talk about this. Is there any plan at all from you to get a public forum going on it? Because this is going to impact Salmon Arm in one way or another. Do you have any interest in pulling together a forum?
Well, we have, I have the EDC I've talked to. I've talked to the Chamber of Commerce for about 45 minutes. Hopefully it wasn't the most boring meeting they've ever had in their life, but they had lunch too, so it was okay. I've talked to Chamber, and I've gone to a bunch of other meetings, the Envisioning Committee. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping to develop some direction from there. And I would really need to hear from the highways and see what this is, the next move is. And they were supposed to have contact my dad on their property, which he's one of the major stakeholders. Not a word.
Well, as you say, it looks like this is a done deal for the ministries. It's going to be small details, small matters. I have no idea whether there's an option to... you know, pull in some bizarre way, create another little bridge here, you know, zing in and zing out again. I don't know. But maybe there are opportunities for people to have a brainstorming session with you to help you make decisions about what could go on here, at the very least.
Well, I know, and that's one...
To change the model.
Yeah, one part of it was to adopt, you know, the farmer's market, to get people out there, to make it so it's the habit. But again, the farmer's market typically... the hard for me is that it's not a brick and mortar. They don't generate taxes for anyone, really. They largely operate on cash.
But if you became a hub...
Yeah.
And we developed an educational program that went along with it, and we had lockers there for people to freeze food, prepare food, canned food. It's an educational complex as well as what it is now, and it always has the cannon and it has the mace.
Well, it certainly could be, and there's nothing that's impossible. It's just a matter of being able to put those ideas together
into practice.
It pays, too, because ultimately it's still democracy, and you still got to pay the guy that wants mortgage money, and if you can't do that. The writing's on the wall and it's over.
Well, I'm going to talk to my folk, to talk to your folk about getting some ideas going. Okay. And I think having a forum, you need some other ideas to come in here.
Well, you do.
Generate. Yeah. This is What So What with myself, Jerry Paquette, is the host, and my guest, Brad DeMille. And we have been talking about the Trans-Canada Highway change and its impact on the businesses nearby, particularly DeMille's. Thank you for listening today. And don't forget, if you have an idea for Brad, stop in and say, hey, where's Brad? I have an idea for what he can do. I'm sure he's going to be open.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, Brad. I appreciate you coming.
You're welcome. It's been a lot of fun.
Now, I want to go out and see your bike.
The beast.
Bye, all.